Morning. I think there are fewer members of the press or something. What's happening? Things are changing.
Spring break.
Spring break for reporters? Is that what's happening? Well, listen, a couple things. Today I'm pleased to be joining legislators shortly to honor our women veterans. I'm going to be going down to the speaker's chambers for that and encourage you all to join us there. This morning I signed HB 80, the wastewater treatment bill, and that will now become law. This past week I participated in the National Governors Association conference in Washington, D.C., and came away more firmly believing that Washington, D.C. is broken. We've got the President and Congress blaming each other, no trust between the parties, and they appear to have literally no way to stop careening from crisis to crisis. And Washington is not only broken, but it looks like the federal government is broke. And while all eyes have been focused on the sequester deadline of March 1st, on March 27, another crisis looms, with potentially larger ramifications than the sequester. For on March 27th, if the Congress and the President have not passed a continuing resolution for the federal budget, then a federal government shutdown occurs. So we will have gone from January's fiscal cliff to the March 1 sequester to the April 1 potential government shutdown, crisis to crisis, and then, oh, by the way, a debt limit challenge this fall as well. That's the state of play with the federal government right now. Washington television talking heads are certainly full of that discussion. And with Washington broken and broke, it just seems to me that Alaska has got to take care of ourselves and work smarter to secure its own future with the vast natural resources and the talent that we have here. You're already familiar with the legislation we filed to do that, and so let me just go back to focus on what occurred at the NGA meeting, where I, along with other governors, asked federal administration officials for more flexibility with federal funding to meet the needs of Alaskans. We told cabinet-level officials and the president that as governors, we were willing to be responsible and accountable for results. We asked that the federal government give us freedom to design our own programs to achieve those outcomes rather than adopting policy by compulsion, federal money with strings attached. And it's not that the governors said, give us just a chunk of money and then wave goodbye. What we said is, tell us what you want accomplished with the money and allow the states to each uniquely get to those outcomes and hold us responsible for those outcomes. With that as a backdrop, I met personally with U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius to discuss her views on Medicaid expansion under the ACA. I let the Secretary know we were doing our due diligence on the Medicaid expansion and that I had several concerns. First, we want to make sure that our current Medicaid system works well for Alaskans who are beneficiaries of that program right now. And we've been able to gain efficiencies and constrain the growth of Medicaid expenditures without sacrificing service to Medicaid-eligible Alaskans. Next, I told the Secretary that I was very concerned about expanding Medicaid where the federal government could renege on its promise to fund the lion's share of any Medicaid expansion. I mean, remember the crisis points I just mentioned that we're in right now. The federal government has cut both Medicaid and Medicare recently, and federal cuts to any expansion pose a real risk to Alaska once any expansion goes into place. So if we expand the Medicaid population and the federal government fails to keep its financial commitment, the state would likely have to backfill for lost federal dollars to cover beneficiaries of the expansion and to protect the health coverage of everyone currently in the program. I let the Secretary know that Alaska will approach Medicaid and decisions about expansions in a financially responsible way. That means making sure existing Medicaid beneficiaries are not put at risk by expanding the program. It means making sure that any expansion is financially sustainable by the state should the federal government cut its percentage participation or commitment in the future. I asked the Secretary whether Alaska could have some flexibility on how the expansion was implemented, whether we could expand Medicaid on a more limited basis with more people utilizing the exchanges, which are more market-driven and promote individual responsibility, more so than a straight-up government Medicaid expansion. The secretary indicated that she did not believe she had that kind of flexibility under the law for a partial expansion. So given what we know, what is the state's course with Medicaid expansion and that decision? Well, during the remaining days of this legislative session, because remember the legislature will adjourn by April 15, so 45 days from now, we're halfway through. During the remaining days of this legislative session, I will not ask the legislature for money or authorization to expand Medicaid. At this point, the federal government cannot even say with certainty that it can meet its obligations to cut welfare checks on April 1st, let alone finance Medicaid expansion. With a little over 45 days to go in the legislative session, with the federal government lurching to another fiscal crisis on March 27, and still another one this fall, we will protect Alaskans now on Medicaid by working to do a better job with what we have. I let the secretary know that my next decision point on the issue was when I submit next year's budget to the legislature in December. In the interim, we will continue to do our homework on whether Medicaid expansion is in the state's interest and take into account the experience of other states that are being granted increased flexibility. So to summarize, no ask of legislators at this time for Medicaid expansion, and I will revisit the issue in next year's budget decision while continuing the homework between now and then. So let me wrap up these remarks and take some questions. You're the first one up. Man, you're good.
You're tough to keep up with, Governor. When you say you're not going to ask the legislature for any funds for expansion, will you veto any funds they put in? And also, what is the effect going to be of not asking for any funds to the current state of affairs with that in Alaska?
I haven't given that question much thought in terms of whether I would veto. You'd have to ask the legislature whether or not they'd even consider such a thing in terms of doing their own expansion of Medicaid through the budget process.
So if you're just neutral on more state money into it or opposed to any more state money into it?
Right now, given what I know about the federal budget, I'm opposed to expanding it, given the fact that we don't know whether the state's going to have to cover the TANF checks, the temporary assistance to needy families checks, come April 1. It just doesn't seem prudent to be expanding Medicaid in that arena, given the time frame on the legislative session. So I will be revisiting that decision. It's something that if a state chooses not to expand the Medicaid population in kind of an all or nothing approach, those decisions can be revisited down the road. You can still pick up the federal match, but at this point in time, both the legislature and I and the Alaska people need to see that it's in our interest as a state before we go down that road. And right now, I don't see that's the case, but I'm open to being proven, differently. Pat.
Question for maybe you or the commissioner, but for the states that do decide to go ahead with this, when would federal money start flowing to those states, and is Alaska actually leaving any money in D.C. because of this?
Commissioner, I'm going to ask you to address that question because I do not know the answer of when expansion money would be available to states.
The expansion of Medicaid, the premium or coverage of benefits begins January 1, 2014. That's the first time that money can be drawn against that because it's a coverage of benefit. It's nothing else. And states can begin drawing as soon as they begin spending the money for the cost of care. Does that help?
Thank you.
About half the fiscal year.
Okay. Adam.
Governor, when you are doing next year's budget, and in light of the sequestration and these cuts that could be coming our way in about a month, with certain federal programs that may not be available, federal dollars, what I'm trying to say is, how do you go about funding those programs that may not have the money when the sequestration takes effect here in the state?
Well, my hope is that when the Congress and the President get through sequestration, get through the continuing resolution process, get through the debt limit discussions that will occur, call it a crisis, call it discussions in the fall. My recollection is that we were told there's another decision point out there for the Congress in the fall, that we will have a greater sense of direction from the federal government at that point. But right now, need both sides, you know, it's all three sides, the president, the Senate, the House. There is nobody can tell you what is going to happen, you know, April 1, let alone how the sequester reductions will be apportioned by OMB. I mean, there is so much unknown right now. By budget time next year, by this year in December, we will at least have met, the Congress and the President will at least have met and gone beyond those points in time and those decision points, and we will know more at that point. So, Lisa.
Lisa Diemer, Anchorage Daily News. House Bill 69 has passed the House and exempting Alaska from federal gun laws and saying that federal agents would be arrested under if they try to enforce new federal gun laws such as a ban on semi-automatic weapons. Would you send would you approve of state troopers arresting or charging federal agents who try to enforce a new federal gun law? And would you want the state Department of Law to defend Alaskans who were charged with violating federal gun laws?
I support that legislation. I supported the underlying legislation. How it gets implemented and enforced, there are multiple ways and multiple opportunities. And so for me to comment at the, on this point on exactly how that might take place, I'm not going to do it right now. Yeah.
Mark Miller, Juneau Empire. As you noted, Governor, we're about halfway through the legislative session right now. I'm curious for your perspective, how's the legislature doing so far?
I think they're doing a great job of working hard on legislation that's before them. You know, I note on oil tax reform, for example, there's been over 26 public hearings on oil tax reform, let alone what's transpired in the last 2 years. So I think that any person who is watching or a part of this process can see that they are diligently working, and that's what they're supposed to be doing. So, Pat?
Any thoughts about taking a personal role in fixing what's broken in Washington, D.C.?
You know, I thought about that when I was back there, because in all the governors, I mean, we talked about that. Most of us, let me just speak for myself, I concluded that Alaska has to be positioned to sustain itself economically like we were promised it stated. I came back saying this is so messed up right now in Washington that I will do everything I can to make sure that we grow our economy here and we provide opportunities for Alaskans here without being dependent upon Washington to create those opportunities, or because I question whether they really can anymore.
Can you do that best from here or from there?
If you're asking about a race or a campaign, I'm not going to speak to that. I've already said that that's a decision for after the legislative session. I'm busy focused being governor right now. Yeah, Lisa.
On the federal budget issues, you mentioned, you called it crisis after crisis. So if they don't resolve the crisis.
Which one?
sequester or.
We know sequester is going to happen. We were told that sequester is going to happen, so count on it.
And
coming.
And then continuing budget resolution to fund the federal government. What are you doing to prepare? What are going to be the biggest impacts in Alaska, and what are you doing to deal with that?
Well, the biggest impacts are going to be probably in the civilian contractor side with the military. That's as best I can determine. Now, the White House released a laundry list of potential impacts. Some of them appear to be accurate. Others appear to be overstated, but we won't really know until OMB, federal OMB, apportions those out and tells America how those will be taken. My job as governor is to assure that anybody who is having trouble with their employment or who is unemployed has job opportunities in this state. That's why, one of the reasons why we're here is to create more oil production, the ability to have a business and a life here in this state. So when I think about what's going on in the federal government, I think about in this building, we as the administration and as a legislature have to be focused on clearing paths of opportunities for Alaskans here. That's what we're doing. Adam?
You
And you were just talking about the progress of the session. There seems to be just a lot to digest with the oil tax reform and natural gas pipeline. A lot of the lawmakers, some of them said it's just overwhelming. Would you be willing to do a special session to get all this done?
I think it's too early to even speculate about a special session. This legislature has showed themselves capable of completing a large amount of work in a short amount of time. You know, holding, like I said, holding 26 hearings, 26 plus hearings on increasing production and getting Alaskans their fair share of their oil, you know, that's significant. That hasn't been done in the last few years. And I think very highly of this House and Senate and their ability to get things done. So at this stage of the session, I don't even mention special session. Most governors don't talk or think about that till the day or two before the end of the session is supposed to happen. So we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Governor, while we're talking about oil tax reform, have you had a chance to look at the committee substitute for SB 21 that just came out of Senate Resources Committee yesterday? And do you have any thoughts on it?
I have had the opportunity to be briefed on it. I have not yet personally read the entire bill. I think that they made some positive steps forward. I think going back to our guiding principles, which is what I focus on, I think they did a good job of maintaining the simplicity there. And I think going forward that they've done a good job of making us competitive over time. I have to say that I would like to see some more adjustments on the lower oil price side of things. But overall, I think they've done good work, and I'm looking forward to continuing that work in the committees ahead. Bob.
Governor, on your numbers, you said 26 hearings is a lot. The Senate has three committees that have had some hearings on oil taxes: the TAPS Throughput Committee, the In-State Energy Committee, and the Resources Committee. And I think Finance has had at least one hearing. House has had a number of hearings in House Resources, and I'm not sure if the House Energy Committee has had it. But that's at least four committees into 26 hearings over 45 days. It's not a remarkable amount of hearings on one bill. There's just a lot of people going over what is very often the same material presented by your administration. Your administration
so you're
also.
So you're saying there's too much public process right now? Is that
no,
what you're
I'm
saying?
I'm saying you are over inflating the amount of attention that's given to it, given the fact that a lot of the hearings are very repetitive and there's a lot of people. It's not as though one committee is doing a lot of hearing on one bill. Your Department of Environmental Conservation's statements in hearings were proven to be pretty inaccurate on the cruise ship bill. The things that were told to the advisory committee, the claim that you would not use their preliminary report for legislation, and that your transmission letter says that. On
Do you have
Tuesday,
a question, Bob?
Yes, sir. Well, you're about to reject my proposition, so I'm laying the foundation for it.
Okay.
On Tuesday, the Senate Democrats presented what Senator Wilkowski says was a lot of misinformation from your people on the oil tax bill. There seems to be a continual record of your agencies not giving accurate information on different bills. How do you react to those charges?
I think they're false allegations, and you know, if you would, you know, we can do line and verse, but we're not going to do it right here. But I reject the premise. So,
when would you do that? You don't want to talk to Senator Wilkowski about it. He's asked to debate you any number of times. How does the
he
public?
He hasn't even asked for a meeting to talk with me. So, I mean, what the heck?
That would you debate him? I mean,
no, it's not about a debate. It's about doing the people's work here in this building. And when you minimize the work of legislators by saying those 26 hearings are just pointless and they're ridiculous.
It's the work of legislators,
you did.
Governor.
When you said 26 hearings are really nothing because you're going over the same information over and over, you are minimizing their work, Republicans and Democrats. I love this institution of the legislature. It was created by the people, and we will keep it that way.
Sir, I was addressing what you're claiming to be an awful lot of hearings in a short amount of time. It wasn't a short amount of time, and there were a lot of people working on it. And it's another example of the ways you seem to be misrepresenting numbers. And now all you're saying is we'll talk about it later.
No.
When do we get an accounting of the misrepresentations which have been documented?
Just like the Democrats, you're making bald allegations with no specific statements.
I gave you a bunch of specific ones. It's exactly what I was doing when you tried to cut me off before.
Okay.
The record
Lisa.
Of the environmental, of the AC.
Bob, we're going to move on. Follow up quickly on that, then go to another topic very quickly. But just he had asked, and I didn't hear the answer. Would you debate Senator Wilikowski, and if not, why not? On oil taxes, it's probably your top priority for the session. Why not have a debate?
We are. The debates are happening in the halls of this legislature. His job as a legislator is to debate those topics in the halls of this legislature, including with people that represent me on this topic. He is one of 50. He's one of 60 legislators, and those debates need to happen in the halls of this building with 59 other legislators.
Don't you think going kind of head-to-head with someone on the other side so the public can hear you directly articulate the points?
I think the public is hearing me directly. I think they're hearing him directly. In fact, they've heard probably more of him through your newspaper than me. But in these halls here, the point is that the debates occur through the committee process. That's the nature of things. That's what's happening. Okay, let's go online.
Operator, could you take us off lecture mode, please? We're ready for online Q&A.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1.
Hello?
Bill, go ahead with your question.
Okay, this is Bill McAllister. Governor, you're a lawyer. If I heard correctly, you support HB 69. Can you explain to me how that conforms with the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution?
I can, and in part it's because you're assuming that the underlying law is constitutional. I'm assuming that the underlying law is not constitutional, and therefore the Supremacy Clause would not even kick in. It would not be an issue at that point. So there are ways that bill would be constitutional.
Well, you're talking about a constitutional question that has not been decided by a court yet, and the legislature and the governor of Alaska don't decide what federal laws are constitutional or not. And until a court rules on that, how can you say it's constitutional or not?
That would be our contention of anything that we thought violated the Second Amendment, is that it would be unconstitutional, and therefore the Supremacy Clause would not even kick in to cast out this underlying piece of legislation. Who else is online?
Go ahead, operator.
There are no other questions online at this time.
Go ahead.
Governor, you talked about the number of hearings that have been done on the oil tax reform proposal and how that shows that the legislature has really done its due diligence on it. Do you wish that there are the same number of hearings on the cruise ship wastewater discharge bill?
I certainly think that is the legislature's prerogative to do it. The point is that it came through committee hearings, came through the public process, and they passed the bill. So I certainly think that the oil tax production bill has far more significant financial implications to the state and deserves intense scrutiny that it's gotten. So, Pat, you were going to ask a question.
Most of the federal money that comes to the state goes through your department, I think. Any thoughts more on how much that might affect the state? Is any of that at risk because of the sequester?
Say that again.
The federal money coming through the department?
Yeah.
Karen, do you want to speak to that? Is that more the commissioner? Either one, whoever can answer that question.
Pat, I think your question was more to the federal funds that come to the state generally.
Yeah.
There, you know, Alaska probably receives somewhere between $11 and $12 billion in total from the federal government, and a lot of those funds go directly to for defense spending, Indian Health Service, programs that aren't all through and to other federal agencies, not directly to the state of Alaska. So the state of Alaska, our budget authorization is about $2.9 billion in total, and that includes our federal highway administration funds. So there's and some of those, along with many of the programs in health and social services, would be exempt from the sequestration. So it really is a case by case looking at the federal programs that would be impacted by that.
But the real question there, when it comes to federal funds, has more to do with the March 27 continuing resolution. I think there's a potentially larger impact on state programs federally funded.
What's at risk and when?
And that, as the governor mentioned, that's all timing. And if, for example, they were not able to get agreement on a continuing resolution and there was a shutdown for a few days, that would be manageable. If it extended for some period of time, it would be much more difficult for a number of our grant programs, and that would be in a cash flow situation.
So temporary assistance to needy families.
Absolutely.
Education.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all of our direct payments.
Yeah. Adam? Okay.
Yeah, I just want to kind of touch on public safety. We covered a homicide in the village of Cake earlier this month. They have no VPSO down there. They said that when they did have one, the program wasn't very effective. When you do get those new VPSOs in some of those villages, I mean, how do you make that program effective and sort of streamline the red tape those guys and women have to go through when they are trying to do their job?
It really is about good training and good follow-up, good management. That's why we fund additional troopers. That's why we fund, you know, to back up that support. That's why we fund their training. And I think that I'd be happy to get Commissioner Masters to speak with you more directly about the training and management of VPSOs. I think that's an important topic. Yeah. Becky, you haven't had a chance to ask any questions.
I just read the advisory.
Oh.
I did want to ask on oil tax question a question. We haven't heard yet from industry, you know, that this would be a significant thing or a game changer. And what the big buzzword term last session was moving the needle, and we haven't heard that yet. And I guess from your perspective, do you need to hear that we would have X amount of new production to feel satisfied that the change that we're looking to make is significant versus just making a change for the sake of making one?
Well, see, first, I believe that the legislation I filed focuses on new production. That's the GRE, for example, the gross revenue exclusion. I think that the Senate resources version, even though it's a somewhat of a rewrite of our proposal, that also focuses on new production, that the $5 credit per barrel for new barrels there. So clearly the focus in both those pieces of legislation is on new production. What you're really speaking to is competitiveness, and do I need to hear from companies that will move the needle? Instead of waiting on the companies, we've had independent analysis done by Econ One, for example, that shows how those tax changes would make us more competitive vis-a-vis other jurisdictions. And that's the independent third-party analysis that we're getting to demonstrate we've moved the needle rather than sitting around waiting for the producers to tell us that. So I will leave it at that. I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you.